Welcome to the Telehealth and Medicine Today Journal podcast series, where research and innovation collide. Today's topic is building scalable, patient-centered, connected care solutions featuring Todd Cornell, President and CEO, MedWan Solutions, Dr. Milton Chen, CEO and co-founder of VC, and William Harding, professor at Trine University, NSF reviewer, and distinguished technical fellow, Medtronic. Our esteemed moderator is Professor Jefferson Fernandez, Director of Education for the International Society for Telemedicine and eHealth, and Latin America Regional Editor for Telehealth and Medicine Today. Let's get right into it.
Hello, everyone. We are starting now another joint podcast between Telehealth and Medicine Today and the International Society for Telemedicine eHealth. These partnerships aim to disseminate information, knowledge, experience, and insights in the field of digital health, and so contributing to the development of this field globally. I'm Jefferson Fernandez, Director of Education at the International Society and Editor for Latin America of Telehealth and Medicine Today. With us, we have today three distinguished and experienced professionals. We will share their insights on the topic beyond telehealth, discussions on building scalable, patient-centered, connected care solutions. They are Milton Chen, CEO and co-founder of VC, Todd Cornell, CEO of MedWan, and William Harding, professor at Trine University. Gentlemen, we are very grateful for your presence in this podcast. Let's begin with each one of you introducing yourselves and the work you do. Please, Milton, you could start.
Thank you so much for the honor to be on your podcast. Really, really appreciate it. So again, I've been running the company VC for about 18, 17 years. And that's my day job. And my night job is I've been to over 50 countries doing telemedicine AI volunteer work in the field, including I took 3 trips to Iraq, 2 trips to Syria. And we've just been to a bunch of countries doing this work, contribute back to society. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Please, William Harding.
Sure. And thank you for having me here. This is a, looks like a wonderful group. For me, you know, I've been doing biomedical engineering for 45 years. I hate even saying that. Seems like must be very old. But in the areas of specific focus toward, we'll say, telehealth or virtual type of health or even remote health, is we've been working considerably with surgeons, you know, creating hybrid cath labs, using things like external extended reality technology to really enhance the experience. So, you know, as someone who's worked a lot on, you know, interoperability solutions and technology integration, this is a strong passion for me, and I'm looking forward to talking with you all.
Thank you very much. Todd?
And thank you. It's a pleasure to be here amongst my distinguished colleagues. I'm Todd Cornell, President and CEO of MedWan Solutions. I've been in the medical device industry for 30 plus years, and much like William, a little embarrassed to say so, but had the opportunity to take over as CEO here at MedWan just over 2 years ago. And this is my first foray into really digital health and telehealth. And I have to tell you, one of the things that attracted me to this area was the significant need that I see developing in the market. As we're aware, we have a significant shortage of clinicians and we have an aging population. And those two factors don't bode well when you put them together. So we look at this as a problem that needs to be solved, and we're focused on developing technologies to make the resources available, obviously, better utilized and to leverage the physician, which is our most, I think, challenging resource at this day and age. So I'm very happy to be here and look forward to further discussions.
Thank you very much. Now I would like each one of you to please share your perspectives on today's topic, building scalable, patient-centered, connected care solutions. Afterwards, you'll have a brief Q&A session. Please feel free to explore your visions and ideas in this topic. Let's start with you, Hilton.
Thank you so much. So I guess I would like the fact that people have been talking about this sort of patient-centric for as long as I can remember. But I think it's been very hard to do in practice. One of the reasons, as a thought experiment, suppose you woke up this morning, you would ask the 5 random people. So you probably, you know, brush their teeth, check their email, and check their phone, took their kids to, in some order. But that order is very likely different between person to person to person. So when it comes to patient-centric and medical workflow, it's the same thing, right? So everybody have their own preferences on how they do things. It doesn't mean right or wrong. It's just the nature of healthcare. Everything's unique. So now when you come to us, I'm a software person. When you come to doing software, now you have a dilemma. How do you actually create software that could be customized to everybody, what everybody wants, and still make the software actually secure? And you can actually maintain, that become almost an impossible task. That's why if you look at even the largest healthcare company, Epic, Oracle, Cerner, like all these mega companies, right? It's hard for them to make a product that people really love in there because this is a fundamental issue, right? It's not one size fit all. So the approach we took is say, what if you can make complex software without any programming at all? Right. Again, programming tend to be the Achilles heel when you come to creating patient-centric workflow, right? You could create prototype. You could create a first release. But as a thought experiment, you would take out your mobile phone, look at every icon that you use on your first screen. The effort it took to maintain that software is absolutely enormous. It's in fact way exceed what most people expect in this. So this is our thinking as well. The only way you can create this is create a model where you can do this without doing any programming as you allow clinicians to create a workflow. Again, this is what our company, VC Health, has done. Again, we create a set of these Lego building blocks. And one of the properties for this is now you can give you extreme level of security. So the platform we created is not only SOC 2, but we're FedRAMP high. We're one of the few systems you're certified. You can actually create, store American presidents, personal medical records. And we think this approach, we think is a general industry trend, just like company like Stripe, Shopify, Trilial, again, all these great companies. We think the same thing, if it happened within the healthcare industry, will be amazing. And maybe just to give you some ideas where area where I'm personally really excited. So in the US, there's a massive need for rural health, you know, right, from access to specialists to just all sorts of things. Now, if you look at the industry trend, right, there's set of these AI modules that can actually help you do stroke analysis, read the CT. For example, we have a module that's FDA approved. I can save clinician time by about 83% of the time by analyzing the CT. And then there's all sorts of interest great companies, things like Purple AI and so on. Then they could do things like these were do heart attack predictions. And like, for example, you have a patient in your, let's say, rural hospital, able to predict this patient will have a heart attack in the next 1, 2, 3 days in there. And also things like AI that create virtual fencing to help the nurses to be more effective in this. So what I get excited about thing is like, if you have all these amazing AI module combined with a set of way to compose these workflows, again, no programmers, no engineers, no IT involved. It's purely your clinician, your administrator, you without any programming background, you could create these sort of complex workflows. We think that would be a really exciting future that can, I think, Jeff, to achieve the vision you set out, right, to be able to create that extreme patient-centric AI, telehealth, digital health, everything. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Milton. Very interesting approach you're telling us. Let's move on with William. Please, William, your views.
Perfect. I like to take it from the perspective of a medical device manufacturer. So when we think about a lot of times when we think of telemedicine or telehealth or any of the technology, we think of things in place, something in a clinical environment, in a hospital, in a home as an example. But it really all starts from the manufacturing of the devices. And I say that because when we think about things like cybersecurity, interoperability, engagement of stakeholders, a lot of people only really think about it from the adoption phase. And so we like to start thinking, you know, like when talking to, like you're listening to Milton, when you start thinking of cybersecurity integrated within subcomponents, sub-assemblies for, you know, small components to the Bluetooth module to the unit that might be wearing for diabetes or something I might, for instance, I have a neuro implant. So something for pain therapy, would it be communicating with that? So when we start thinking about my needs, I need to start thinking from the what's manufactured. Then as it moves into third parties, into the hospitals with the doctors, the patients, and even the caregivers, which is another group a lot of people don't often think about. You know, if I'm ailing and somebody's taking care of me, I'm the patient, but maybe I can't engage. So I need to start thinking about how I'm going to address the needs also of the caregiver. So from those perspectives, I talk less about it and do more. And so in doing more, we're just recently worked with an IEEE team on it's the IEEE 2933-2024 TIPS standard. It was just awarded last year for the technology and the Advanced Technology Award. And the purpose, the reason I'm mentioning that is that standard really brings all the other standards, regulatory issues all together. So when we're thinking about building a system, building a device, working with people, you know, like we talk about hospital home, hospital at home. When you talk about moving from the home to the hospital, these type of engagements, we have to think about the transfer of data. We have to think about the protection of the patient, the product, and even from the manufacturer's point, we got to think about protecting our brand. So there's a lot of things that we have to look beyond the surface to say, how am I going to accomplish that? And that nicely segues into some of the things we've been doing in what we call extended reality. So using augmented virtual and mixed reality. And everybody knows when you think about Pokemon, you've got augmented reality. And when we start thinking of extended reality, it's more of an engagement. You're actually interacting with sensors. You're interacting with your own environment as well as technology and additional sensors you might have. And we presently, and to consider how we're going to take care of it, we're presently using that technology in robotic surgery. You think, wow, how do you do that? We're in London helping a doctor in Tampa to perform a surgery on a patient. And you think about interconnectivity, you think about that's telemedicine. When you think about what you're doing from thousands of miles away at a high bandwidth while still protecting the patient, while still being able to manipulate the robot. So from the perspective of mine, as far as a medical device manufacturing, that's where I've come from. Now, though I'm a professor teaching system engineering, it's only recently. All my focus is literally on these efforts of how we get technology to move from the manufacturer, how we get it to work interoperably with other systems to transform data securely, protecting the patient, payer, and manufacturer and caregiver. Say that three times fast. But thinking about all those aspects, it looks fun and it looks like magic, but we have to think about all those little aspects. And that's one reason I emphasize the standard that I think is worthy of consideration, especially when we think of, you know, telehealth, telemedicine. And the acronym, just so you guys know, is the TIPS portion. So when we think of our privacy protection, safety, security, these type of aspects, these are all integrated within that standard. So that's kind of how we approach it and how I approach it.
Okay. Thank you very much, William, for your views and perspectives on that. Todd, please, your views on the subject, patient-centered care.
Absolutely. I'll look at it and diverge a little bit from my colleagues here. When we're thinking about patient-centered care, we're focused on one of the big problems that Milton kind of hit on a little bit, which is rural healthcare and rural healthcare delivery. I think this is an area, if we step back and look at what are the issues we have to face, you know, 1 in 4 Americans, so approximately 61 million people currently live within rural areas of the U.S. And obviously those numbers translate on a global scale. One of the issues they face for just trying to get access to care is traveling long distances, limited local providers, you know, poor broadband or telehealth capabilities. So one of the things we as a company are focused on, again, is how can we do more with less? So we've developed technology that's a sensor-based product and telehealth software platform that enables a physician to remotely do a very comprehensive examination of a patient. But again, the key word being remote. With broadband access and telehealth platform, we can go in, do a full vitals exam, capture 11 vitals, and let that physician who's either in maybe a more urban setting or in one location of a clinic able to expand their reach out to a number of patients that are inhabiting in the rural populations. And the idea is, you know, providing better health equity for people across the globe. A lot of people don't have access to healthcare, and a lot of people don't have the ability to go in and have primary care assessments. And what we know about our medical environment is very simple. Two things hold true. Number one is the earlier we diagnose something, the more effectively we can treat it. Number two, the earlier we diagnose it, the earlier we treat it, the less expensive it is to treat. So we're really focused on trying to enhance patient screening and patient assessments from a primary care perspective so that we can find and diagnose change of conditions earlier so that they can be treated earlier and treated more effectively and less expensively. And by doing so without requiring more resources, which are really the challenge we all face today, is there are limited medical resources available to us. So shifting some of the burden from a physician to a nurse or a medical assistant or a family member or somebody that can go in and assess the patient in a local rural area, maybe a clinic or local home even. So we've really tried to focus on delivery of care, enhancing the physician's reach within the areas, and really addressing one of the things that I think our current administration is placing a value on. Is I think we're all aware, as part of the big, beautiful bill that was passed, is they're allocating $50 billion of federal funding over the next 5 years to really try and enhance rural health care. Because we all recognize this is an issue as Americans, and even on a global scale, we have to do better. So it's big, big focus for us. It's a big area of focus. And again, coming back to the beginning, it's patient-centric because we're trying to address issues that patients face on a local and regional level.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Todd. I would like to start our Q&A session by asking first to Milton. And please, William and Todd, if you'd like to comment on the question or the reply, feel free to do so. Milton, my question is related to clinicians' adoption of digital solutions. From your experiences, though, that works closely to physicians, to clinicians, and what are the main challenges for this adoption, and also how to overcome now this challenge that presents through this to this adoption?
You see the question there. So I'm going to say something slightly controversial. I know you're probably going to hear this in most conferences. I think the problem is actually not clinician adoption. The problem is terrible software or hardware user experience. I'll give you an analogy. Before Steve Jobs created the iPhone, he had a navigator. It was about 20 years earlier. So he's been thinking about something like a handheld phone-ish thing for about 20 years, right? It took about 20 years of development until if you go from the first navigator to the iPhone, right? The feature is very similar. So to most people say, well, why can't people use the navigator? Well, because it sucks, right? It has the features, but the user experience is terrible. So when it comes to user adoption clinician, I would say overwhelmingly it's simple, right? If you give them bad software, you shouldn't try to, you know, you shouldn't be surprised people will not reject your system, right? You shouldn't be surprised because it's really bad software. And if you make good software, really something that's valuable for them, you don't need to give them training. You don't need to give them carry or sticks. People just naturally adopt it. And then that's it. right? Again, this is going to my early, say, my simple analogy. Think about all the app on your phone on the first screen. Do I need to force you to say, please use this to get me? Like, no, you use it because it's valuable. It works for you. And that's it. I think a clinician, again, most people underestimate, right, the difference of making a prototype versus a product people actually love. Just build a great product and people will die.
If you don't mind, can I add into that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, please.
Because I think what Nolan said is really valuable. And I hear a little feedback here. One of the things I think I almost got from you, Milton, is I think about the ease of use and usability. That's it. We're really trying to design things. I try to get my engineering students to think the same way. You know, like, and it's the same thing like you said about engaging the customer. You know, and one thing I'd encourage also people to do is think about, we use a methodology called design thinking. Stanford, Harvard, everybody uses this. It's a great way to engage your customer, to help them see what the prototypes might look like, to really have a voice into that construction, the testing or prototyping, and then addressing, like you said, you've dealt with the ease of use and usability of product. So I love the message you made.
And in fact, if I can add on actually just a different perspective, I agree with both of my colleagues. I think the one area I would add in is one of the things I think that becomes challenging in our environment is sometimes there's not a support mechanism or a reimbursement mechanism to help drive that change. So today, as we see, telehealth interactions may be reimbursed at a different level than an in-person interaction. So I think until the payers recognize and realize the value proposition that occurs, there might be a financial disincentive to adopt a new technology or get ahead of the curve. And I think that's one of the pieces that we have to look at from a global perspective. If you really want to drive technology and efficiency, sometimes it's required to ensure that the reimbursement's appropriate so that people aren't losing a financial or having a financial disincentive. That's one area I think we can all look at as an environment.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. That was something I was about to ask to William. It's regarding the patient engagement or the clinician telling the patients that they should use or the organization. And from your experience, William, how is the market behavior regarding this financial aspect, you know, how to engage the market in accepting and who pays for that device?
You're exactly right, Jeff. And what Todd was saying is we used to think of that trifecta, the payer, the patient, and the healthcare provider. And you heard me mention that the caregiver should be thrown in there also because it's an important role. But yes, it's like any designing a project. We think about time, resources, money. You have to have a proper balance between all those. And if you're not engaging the payer in the sense of what Todd said of here's my value proposition, it's the same way as you look at your sponsor. My sponsor is going to be funding my project. Have I sold them? What is my value proposition? What is the problem statement I'm trying to address? And to answer your question, Jeff, specifically, the reason I mentioned with Milton earlier about design thinking, we in the company I worked for, we actually used the methodology I mentioned about design thinking to develop some of the products that are now yielding more than $1 billion, as an example. And as a company that is worth about $445 billion, that was relatively significant. And the way we did that is I'll use an example. We had MS patients. We had patients, the doctors, we had everybody with us, held it at our home office. We went from the day we started it early in the morning, we finished in the day, and it felt like inventing the airplane and building and flying it by the end of the day. It was so crazy. But what was wild is by engaging the patient as that person in what I say about design thinking, the methods of prototyping, ideation, empathy, understanding what those needs are, we were able to go through all those phases, come up with a product that literally in this case here, it made a small change to a lead that was actually, you know, costing us a lot of money, things you didn't even think about. It was the wow factor. And it would change the cost of the product from $1,500 to $500. Think about approaching your payer from that perspective and say, I've just cut that in half by three times the product. So when I think about engaging the customer, not just trying to, like Milton's saying, we don't want to just shove it down and say, here, take this and use it. It's not going to succeed. You have to, and it has to be also something you follow up with. You don't just drop it and run. You got to do some audits. You got to get some feedback. You got to make sure you're engaging them. So this is a reiterative process that has to start and include all those elements of the payer, the patient, the healthcare provider, and the caregiver.
Right. Right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. And Todd, I would like to ask you regarding, you know, the access for healthcare for residents in the rural area. What are the main barriers these rural residents face in assessing care? Sorry.
No. Great question. I think if you think about the you know, construct of rural areas versus more urban areas, you know, the things that automatically qualify is you think about they have to travel longer distances to seek healthcare normally. There's limited local providers versus a more urban area where you might have a multitude of clinics in or hospitals or urgent care centers. Those tend to be very sparsely located in more rural areas. We mentioned earlier there could be very poor to no broadband or access, which would limit the ability to deliver things on a telehealth perspective. Transportation challenges can exist. People might not have access to immediate transportation. So that, you know, coupled with distance becomes a very big challenge for them. And if you look at, again, within the population itself, because those challenges exist, then you have the overall management of those patients. They tend to have higher rates of chronic conditions, higher maternal mortality, higher mental health challenges, and generally their life expectancy is 2 to 3 years shorter than somebody who lives in a more urban area. So you couple all that together, it's a problem that we think needs to be addressed.
Yes, and if I can add to what Todd just said there. Todd, I loved your perspective, and you gave me a flash when I was living in Arizona. We think of the Native Americans, and we think of some of them living 6 hours from a hospital. And we actually did something that I think reflects well on working with other teams. So we don't all have to try to solve these by ourselves, but work with other teams to do this, to accomplish this. And to support your scenario is we had a case where we wanted to know what the Native Americans wanted to, what was important to them. And most of the females said, you know, every time I have to get a mammogram, I have to travel 6 hours one way. I have to then leave. Maybe it's on a Friday. They tell me, oh, you got to come back for something. I've got to do this over and over. So by working with the local university, a couple of hospitals, we were able to come up with a monitoring program that could allow them to arrive to get the first scan. If they needed the second scan, they get that done all within 74 minutes. And that type of thing was what we think about is, I know we think of drone triage. We think of other different ways of getting this. But when we looked at the need of the customer, it was literally, I'm just not going to get my health check because I have to travel this distance. So I liked your perspective, and I think it really supports that model.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to pose a question to all of you, and it's about, you know, a concept that usually say that digital health, AI, should transform the health care system, supporting the change from a sick care to a really health care, in all the sense that we can include health promotion, health prevention, and of course, diagnosis, treatment, in rehabilitation. And not just to provide solutions that will keep the problems of the system as they are. Of course, there are several solutions that we need, and we have discussed here a lot of them for how things are and then can improve. But regarding this transformation, how much effort is being placed on trying to help this change? And of course, technology or digital health or AI is not going to solve everything. It's not going to do the transformation because they are inserted in the health system structure, policies, and so on. But what I can see sometimes is the provision of solutions just keeping the same problem. Of course, we know, for instance, that there is a shortage of health professionals. in several countries. I can give you the example in Brazil that actually do not have the problem of shortage of health professions. The problem we have here and other countries in Latin America is the distribution. They try to tend to keep in the cities or the large urban areas because, you know, of several difficulties to work in the rural areas, etc. But how much do you think these solutions just keep the problem as it is? Let's say we can see sometimes no new startups showing solutions that, okay, AI will do all the history taking and so on, and the physician will just check it. So it can see 4 to 5 more times physicians. Is that solving a problem, or is just no keeping the problem and trying to increase production as a product instead of trying to help the system to improve? We'd like to hear your visions on this kind of approach and concept.
Yeah, I would say maybe I want to go back to a little bit what Tom mentioned about reimbursement, all these. I think the things like the patient-centric wellness, or sick, all these things, at the end of the day, there's so much money to be made on that when people are sick. So that's why it's, unless you, there's financial incentive for that, I don't think there's any change in there, right? Because again, it's, at the end of the day, it's about technology, follow the money. So the thing I would like to recommend maybe your audience to look at is like a Stand Together Foundation, right? They've been doing a lot of really interesting economics work on healthcare. How do you go back to the idea is about how do you fund the patient, have cash payment model? It was like, if you think about the U.S. healthcare, before the invention of this sort of like convoluted payer model, all these things where every year become more and more expensive, you need to just go back to the free market economics in there, right? Again, I always use the Stand Together Foundation as an anchor point. So when you use those type of model, then everything you want, I think naturally will come, and then there's an economic incentive for people to do that. You're essentially able to escape from the payer provider. They're sort of like almost not quite monopoly, if you will, they're a chokehold on the healthcare system in there, right? So then I think, again, all the technology will follow the money and you can achieve exactly what you want.
Well, to that point, I'd like to add on, Milton. I agree. And I think one of the things we're seeing is from a disruption perspective, we're seeing some employer health starting to really take a bigger play in offering healthcare to their employees. And what they're doing to disrupt that is they are contracting directly with physician groups who are offering telehealth services on site and, you know, physician led. And, you know, they're kind of shifting from purchasing a global health policy for each of the employees to, you know, catastrophic policy for any very unforeseen or hospital based circumstance, but really focusing on health and wellness and checking the patient more frequently, noting a change of condition early and being able to manage it earlier. And they're really changing the dynamic of the payer and provider and trying to take ownership and reducing their cost on a per employee basis and offer what they consider to be more personalized care. We're seeing that particular model begin to get a lot of traction in the U.S. and actually outside of the U.S. even because of the rising cost of healthcare. So while I agree, I think Milton made a great point. Unless you change the financial model, there's not a big incentive for change. But I think we're getting to the point where people are starting to look at different models for that disruption.
And I like what you both are saying, and I'm going to take that and even move to one of the things that Jeff had mentioned around possible use of AI. And ultimately, when we look at things, and I'll use example, I know it's an older stat, maybe about 5 years, but one of the things we looked at was, here's a ratio of physicians to patients, 1 to 10,000, is an example in India. And you start looking, it's like, wow, how do you do this? And we started thinking about remote clinics or pop-up clinics where we could try to address and get people there. They have the rail system that's been running for more than 20 years, where it's a mobile hospital basically on the rail going from town to town. But back to what Jeff had said about the possible use of AI is, you know, I do a lot of work in AI, and specifically when you think of agentic, narrow, weak, geospatial or emotional AI, I do a lot of aspects of those. And when I look at it practically and I say, you know what? I think it is a tool that we can use. I think it is something that can assist us. You still have to consider where the data is being, where it's being trained. the large language model, what the trust, the data, whatever, but as a way to collect the data to help diagnose with maybe possible diagnosis, that goes to the hospital at the home type scenario, where now you've got intelligent users who have access to, you know, through their insurance or whatever method they've got access to an EMG. They've got the EKGs, they've got the pulse ox, they've got all this technology, and they're able to collect a reasonable amount of diagnostics, data and vital, that can help reduce some of the burden. So we've been developing a lot of efforts. You know, when I think of patients that are using what we call the intelligent reflective intelligence, it's a mirror system that's engaging an AI system, topographical range as IR ranging, topographical mapping, so it understands spatial environment. And it's able to help assess physical or non-contact type of, like we'll say the rouge with a lupus patient. It's able to detect specific elements that the patient might be prone to. So ultimately being tied into some of our AI systems to help us flag and alert high priority items, to reduce the burdens of patients going to hospitals with, we'll say, minor things that can be treated from remote or whatever. But also with the biggest focus on trying to reduce the burden on the hospitals, the doctors, and then decentralizing. And I'll use one last example. When you think of hospitals, we approached India and said, we're going to try to put all these hybrid cath labs together. We made a mistake. We didn't realize most of the medical care was being handled by the pharmacist, the localized pharmacist. They knew all the medical records and information of the patients. It wasn't the doctors. It wasn't those pricey hospitals. It was those individuals. It was the little people on the corner that were collecting data. So we really had to start thinking about that diverse group, and whether, like we say, Native Americans, Indians, whatever, is how do we take advantage of that again with a focus of reducing burdens on the patient, on the doctors, and speeding up, we'll say, care to, you know, healthy outcomes for patients.
Wonderful. Well, we are approaching the end of our podcast. We just have several minutes of exciting and insightful comments from Milton Chain, from William Harding, and from Todd Cornell, who I thank you very much again for having sharing your time and your knowledge with us. And I hope that our audience could listen and review topics that are important for reflections and helping directions towards the improvement of healthcare, except mainly in this patient-centered approach. So again, thank you very much for that. This is a podcast that is held by Telehealth and Medicine Today and the International Society for Telemedicine in Health. And we hope to see you again and in the next podcast of this joint partnership. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate your tuning in to the Telehealth and Medicine Today podcast series. Do you want to learn more or have a comment? Do you have a novel topic or solution to share with our audience? If so, send an email to info@partnersindigitalhealth.com or visit the open access peer reviewed journal Telehealth and Medicine Today and stay up to date with exciting articles that bridge research with real world frontline impact. Thanks for listening.